Eternal Dragon.
Welcome to Smoking Section, a podcast by Eternal Dragons, a digital archive that emulates nicotine-filled Brave Break conversations to reflect on Asian diasporic identity, the arts, and culture. I'm your host, Miles, aka DJ Oyosumi. Today we are joined by Jex Wang. Jex is a DJ, writer, meme lord, and Gemini perpetually based on the internet. They are a central organizer for Eastern Margins, where they act as A&R, community manager, and court jester. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you said smoking section. I didn't know this was called smoking section. I want to roll a cigarette. That means I can smoke during this. Do you want to see? Should I tell what I'm smoking, the listeners?
Do you smoke inside?
Yeah. My housemates are like whatevs about it, or I've convinced them to be whatevs about it.
What are you smoking in Australia?
So in Australia, there's a tobacco called Champion Ruby, which I really like. I don't know how to describe it. I feel like it's the same type of emphysema vibe as all other cigarettes, but I don't know. There's just like a little like bit of a layers to it. It's a nice tobacco. And then I use only one brand of papers called Venti. Because the other papers are like smooth, whereas these ones have like grooves in them. And then I use menthol filters because like smoking leaves a bad taste. Sometimes, you know what? I've been smoking for like probably 13 years of my life now. And every time I have a cigarette, I'm just like, man, this tastes bad. So that's why menthol cigarettes fix it.
Dang, I didn't know you could get menthol filters. I think they're like menthols are illegal at least in...
I'm sorry, what? Menthol filters are illegal in America, but like...
No, California.
But still, like guns aren't? Like, what is that country? What is that country? I don't understand America.
I will not excuse this behavior. welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I think, you know, let's just get into it. Maybe we could just like start with growing up in Australia and what that was like as a Chinese person.
I mean, growing up in Australia is a broad question. It really depends on where you grew up and all that kind of stuff. So I grew up in the deep outer suburbs. Like my parents migrated to Australia. All the houses were much cheaper, like 2 hours out of the city. So I grew up there and it was nice. I say it was nice, but it's because I was a child. I didn't know any better. It was just like the suburbs, you know, people like what my friends and I did on the weekend was like, we just go to the shopping center. And as soon as people got their driver's licenses, we could start going to the McDonald's drive-thru. Like that was the main socializing thing to do. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, it was really boring and I would never put my own children through growing up in the suburbs. A few, like, I guess, Australian things is I grew up in a drought. That was a thing. I remember going on, I think, like, Omegle or like, MSN chat rooms and convincing Americans, actually, that all the grass in Australia was just yellow. Like, it wasn't, like, because it was dry. It was just yellow. I remember a lot of 30-second showers because of a drought. But, yeah, I guess that's, like, what the Australian simulation feels like. You know, it's really hot, bushfires. Like every summer you'd be like, I'd like look out and there'd be smoke. I'd ask my mom if we needed to put the photo albums in the car because I heard someone from school did that, but she's not very sentimental, so she's just like, I don't care. So as for like growing up Chinese in Australia, so I was born here and then I am called a satellite baby. So I like my mom sent me back to China because she didn't have any money to raise me. She had to work with my dad, so my grandma raised me in China. And then I came back to Australia, I think, in late 90s. And the time that I came back in Australia, there was also this politician called Pauline Hanson, whose maiden speech in Parliament was, wait, let me see if I can do this, like, nasally Australian accent. She was like, there's an Asian invasion and we need to stop them all. Like, that's how you sound more Australian. You just speak out of your nose. If you speak out your nose, you just sound way more Australian. So she sounds like this and she's in Parliament going on about how many Asians there are and they all need to be stopped. So that was, like, the political, I guess, like, time for me as someone coming back into Australia as a kid. So I was, like, I remember being in China, you know, around my community and my people, and then coming to Australia and being like, I remember seeing a white guy on the plane on my way. I remember this distinctly. And I was just like, what the hell is that? And then I come to Australia and they're everywhere. And it's, like, fucking hot. And I remember being introduced to, like, ketchup for the first time and seeing stuff like McDonald's and, like, KFC and stuff everywhere. I mean, like, Shanghai is super westernized now, but when I was growing up in Shanghai, there was one KFC. I didn't know what McDonald's was. So I come to Australia. It's hot. I remember seeing pictures of, like, emus and kangaroos, and I see, like, palm trees, and it was really confusing. As a child, I do remember being othered quite a lot, like, going to school, people pulling their eyelids down at me, people being like, oh, Ching Chong China, and me being like, Ching means kiss, I think, and then Chong Chong, are you trying to say gun? I'm like, are you trying to kiss a gun? Is that what you, like, you know, to try to understand these, like, things that people were saying to me. But overall, like, I mean, I imagine, like, a lot of diaspora would experience racism in whatever place they grow up. So, yeah, I guess, like, my experience with racism, like, a lot of people go through it. You get othered a lot. Australia is quite a racist country, in my opinion. So there was a lot of that going on. And then, because my parents don't speak English, so they would have to deal with a lot of racism on the street. But because they didn't understand, I would understand. And I'd always get, like, I'm like, why is this happening to us? And essentially, in hindsight, I'm pretty sure I was just brainwashed by, like, white supremacy up until I was in my early 20s. So I spent a lot of time in Australia just trying to assimilate, trying to get into football, like AFL football, which is really hard. It's really hard to play. Like, I don't know why I put myself through that. And then you get trapped in that kind of mindset where you just want to be accepted. For a long time living in Australia, if people were just like, oh, you're cool for an Asian or you're pretty for an Asian, I'd be like, oh, that's great. That's amazing. And then now I'm not like that because, like, I have unlearned a lot of it. But, yeah, as someone who has, like, traveled a lot and speaks to a lot of diaspora all over the world now, a lot of our experiences, I realize, are similar. Just, you know, like, my friends in the UK, similar experiences, but their racial slurs come out in, like, a, you know, wee little British accent. Like, so, yeah, I think there's a lot of things in, I guess, Asian diaspora have in common, but the Australian version is just, like, different types of, I guess, politics at the time. And then... Yeah. You know, I had, like, I did see quite a bit of kangaroos growing up, which my diaspora friends did not see. So, yeah.
It's real.
It's real. The kangaroos are real. They're not everywhere. Like, I did have to go to the zoo. I'll be honest about that. but at the end of the day, like, there's also nice parts about growing up in Australia. Because, like, I mean, I thought about it. I could focus on all the racism. But, you know, we talk about racism a lot, and it happens all the time. And even, like, when you talk about the racism, it still keeps going. So I try and, like, look at it, like, just, I guess, look at the more positive side. Growing up in Australia was nice. The weather was good. You go to the beach all the time. The fruit is good. The food is good. Like, I'm healthy. Like, we have, like, milk everywhere. Like, my parents, like, you know, drink that Australian produce. So, yeah, I feel quite healthy. I'm glad I grew up on the Australian diet. We have great beef. There was a period where, like, our food industry kept putting these ads on TV telling us to eat meat, like, red meat, like, 3 or 4 times a week. So my mum would just, like, feed me a lot of red meat. So, yeah, it's good. I'm quite strong, quite healthy. I swam a lot. I noticed that's a thing being Australian. Other Asian diaspora don't really swim that much, whereas I was, like, my mum was like, fuck, we're a massive island. You're going to fall off. Get in the pool.
you swam, like, pretty seriously.
Mm-hmm. I did, yeah. I swam, like, I love how I'm talking about my former, you know, prestige as an athlete whilst I light a cigarette and destroy my lungs.
The old jock time.
Yes, the jock days. Well, I think for my parents, because we're, like, quite a low-income, working-class, like, immigrant background, my mum really wanted me to go to a private school because that's why she migrated out to Australia to begin with, because of better, you know, education opportunities that she didn't have in China. So to get a scholarship, she forced me to play piano a lot and to also swim a lot, which worked. So I did get a scholarship to a private school. But yeah, I like since I was 8 years old, I'd be up at 5 a.m. every morning just to go swimming and get really, like, be fast. And then I ended up, like, being one of the fastest in the state. And there were rumors that Jax was going to go to the Olympics. But I ended up insisting on quitting because, one, I wanted to party. And, two, I was much shorter than everyone else as well. So, like, physically, I was just like, there's no point me trying to, like, beat, you know, go compete in the Olympians.
Yeah.
With Olympians because they're so tall. Funnily enough, as soon as I quit swimming, I grew like a whole foot taller because I think all the energy going into all that training just went back into my height.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm grateful. Like, it's cool that I swim a lot. You know, used to go surfing as a teenager. Also got pulled out by riptides as a teenager and almost died at like, yeah, my friend and I in high school, we went to a beach with no lifeguards because we knew the waves were going to be really, really big there. And they don't have lifeguards there because otherwise the lifeguards would be too busy. So they'd just be like, don't go to this beach. Naturally, that beach is full of surfers and idiot teenagers like us. But yeah, I guess that was Australia in a way. I still don't think Australia is a real country though. Like, I'm just, you know, spending like all this time overseas and then thinking like, how the fuck is Australia real? And then flying all the way back here and being like, wow, like this weird island at the bottom of the world. Everyone has like real nasally accents and we all sound like this. It's, yeah.
Do you think, I guess like, yeah, talking about like you living overseas after you got older, did that change how you thought about your Asian identity at all, or not really?
It did. It was more affirming of my Asian identity, I think, because, like, growing up in Australia, you do feel a little bit isolated. I mean, I did go to China quite a bit growing up, but I never traveled anywhere else. So every time I went to China, I felt, I wouldn't call it home vibes, because, like, China eventually did not become my home because I spent too much time away from it. Mm-hmm. But traveling around, I lived in France, the UK and Germany, and yeah, like I'd meet like Asian diaspora from all over the world, like people from, you know, mainland China, people from like Japan, Korea, people, yeah, from the, I think it's like, I think when you meet people from like the continents and then you have these similarities and then also these major differences, it does affirm your identity in a way, because you realize like as a group we do have a lot in common even though we grew up in really different environments, and I think that's like, quite nice, and quite, it's a nice side hug, you know what I mean, like it's not a full-on hug but it's like a nice side hug, it's like that acknowledgement of like, yeah, we have that in common. And then it's also really cool because you realize like how diverse everyone is and you get to learn so many new things about so many different cultures, and I think for me it makes me really proud to be Asian.
So in terms of like Eastern Margins stuff, how did you meet the people in Eastern Margins and what sort of like started that for you?
When I was growing up in Melbourne, okay, not growing up, when I was an adult in Melbourne, so like after 18, I was like quite involved in the music scene in Melbourne, but I never felt like I was actually included because it's such a like, it's just run by, like, you know, cishet white men. And by the time I'd moved to London, I'd quit the music industry about three times because of the issues with racism. Mm-hmm. One day, I remember this one day, I was in the morning in London, I was just like, I just quit working with this label because the guy that I was working with completely tokenized me. So I was, like, quite upset about it. And I was scrolling Instagram and I found Eastern Margins. And I remember having to, like, put my phone down just thinking, like, whoa, what do you mean there's a whole platform out here? Mm-hmm. For East and Southeast Asian artists. Like, I'd never seen that before. And that's, like, I guess almost embarrassing in a way on Melbourne because it's, like, so like there's so many Asian people around and they don't have a platform for this. So when I saw it in London, I was like, oh, I have to be involved. And I literally just messaged David, who was, like, one of the co-founders, and was just, like real ballsy too, because, like, my previous time in music industry, it was all me like, quietly being around, hoping I get accepted. But I was just like, yo, like, I probably have more experience than all you guys. Let me join your platform. Because I just spent so much in the industry already, like running, you know, running events and stuff like that. And I knew, I guess I knew with Eastern Margins that they weren't going to judge me for my race. So, you know, whereas before I'd have to, like, you know, convince them that I was, like, that I could do stuff. But with Eastern Margins, I was like, yo, let me join you guys. Me and David went for dim sum. I, like, talked to him about what Eastern Margins was. I went to one event which was in this, like, squat house in, like, South London. It was a genome party. And it was sick because I heard a genome. I didn't really know what it was, though. And then I went to this party. It's, like, in this basement. Everyone looks, like, cool as fuck as well. And, like, all Asian DJs. The music they're playing, it blew my mind. Like, it blew my tiny little, like, in Melbourne, I was into, like, deep house and electro. And then I come to this party, and everyone's playing, like, kind of, like, deconstructed club, experimental music. There's people, like, organ tapes was there. You know what I mean? It's I was like, what is this? This is great. Like, holy shit. And then I'd, like, been clubbing in China before. So to go to that event, it did feel like I was clubbing in Shanghai as well. And I was just like, yeah, I was like, I want to be part of this. I really, really do. And yeah, luckily the guys were just like, yeah, come on board. And now 5 years later, fuck, like we're doing a lot. But Eastern Margins itself, it started because the co-founders, David and Anthony, they were looking for a Lunar New Year party to go to. That wasn't like your typical, like, you know, family thing. And it wasn't like those big, you know, they have those like big events that's like kind of mainstream Normie events. Whereas David and Ant wanted something a bit more underground. And they realized there was a lack of like Asian representation in the underground scene. So that's why they started. And then that's why I was like so excited to join, because I guess I'm more involved in the underground aspect of the music industry. And then, yeah, 5 years later, we've grown with an event series, label. There was an editorial for a little bit, which I keep telling myself I'll bring back up. And, like, we recently just did an interview with, like, DJ Mag about our label. And I was kind of just like, wow, we've come a long way. We've really matured as a collective. Like, as a collective, we started off being like, yeah, let's just throw some parties. Now we've, like, changed our mindset. We're kind of just like, yeah, we've accepted this responsibility that we now have as a platform that's grown, as like, and this responsibility that we're just like, okay, you know, we're getting bigger. We need to work as hard as we can on representing as many East and Southeast Asian artists, like, authentically as well. And, like, you know, really, like, try and get culture from... We really want to connect the cultures between, like, East and Southeast Asia and the West as well, and just provide this platform so yeah, everyone or as many people as possible can, or artists can share their story authentically and their sound.
Yeah, I feel like the growth is, like, pretty clear. You're just even thinking about, like, where you were a year ago versus... like even 2 years ago, just like all the different events that you have done, the Boiler Room.
Yeah, the Boiler Room was that Boiler Room was like.
Was that last year?
Yeah, it was a year ago because I was like living in Berlin when that happened. I remember that Boiler Room. That Boiler Room came because it was after what happened in Atlanta, and I was feeling incredibly frustrated and upset, just seeing the whole Stop Asian Hate movement on the internet, like. I guess at the Asian community, we were supposed to be, like, grateful for that movement. But I was just pissed because I was kind of just like, man, Asian people have been fucking oppressed for, like, centuries now. And you're only going to get on the internet now for this? And that was really frustrating for me. So with that Boiler Room, I really wanted to make a statement about the fact, you know, I don't think, like, it was good, I guess, that we finally got this, like, platform because of this Stop Asian Hate movement, because in my head I'm like, generations of Asian people have been overlooked in the music industry for so long because of the racism they had to go through. They didn't have hashtags at the time, they didn't have this internet movement, but they also deserve to be celebrated. For that Boiler Room, I wanted to really push celebrating intergenerational Asian artists, and that's how we got, like, older generation Asian artists to work with new gen artists and collab together and, like, showcase all the different types of, like, music and dance that we can do. And that's how with that Boiler Room, the introduction video was a video of, like, different generations. I mean, like, my grandma is in that. I got my grandma onto Boiler Room. How many people's grandmas are on Boiler Room? My grandma's just...
Grandma on Boiler Room.
Yeah, doing her eyebrows. It's just not even doing music. It's just like a video. That video is like very sweet because I remember like I was visiting China and I was just filming random things because there was a brief period of my life where I was like, I'm going to become a video documentary person. I haven't touched that camera since. But that footage, I'm really glad I have managed to use it for the boiler room because it just showed me and her like, you know, she's in her 80s. I'm like pushing my late 20s. She raised me from when I was a baby. We've come this far.
That was a cute video. I think you were, she was just like, what are you doing? And you were just like, oh, I'm just recording. And
okay. Exactly.
What was it like reaching out to the kind of like the OG artists for that and kind of pitching the idea to them?
As a collective, we all got together and like brainstormed who we should put on. The artists like Oh Young, who we've been following for a while and we love their work. I remember discovering Oh Young's music on the bus and then missing my bus stop by 4 stops because I was just so like taken aback by their music. But we just like, we wanted to represent different areas as well. So there's a lot of lack in Southeast representation when it comes to like East and Southeast Asian representation. So that's why we reached out to these people in Indonesia who are part of like the punk rock scene. Because I mean, boiler rooms are traditionally, you know, electronic music platform, but we're kind of just like, nah, fuck it. Like, there's so much different types of music that Asian people make. We need to show it. So yeah, we sent a few emails, showed them the concept, and everyone involved was like really excited about it. We had like, you know, Tigan working with Mai, who Mai's a Vietnamese dancer. Tigan's Il Japonye, and he also is in Bo Ningen. It's a Japanese band. We also had like J-Ho, this Korean electronic producer, and he was working with someone playing the guzheng, the traditional Chinese instrument. Because of the pandemic, we had to do it like completely digitally. Like, I mean, I was in Berlin, the East Margins Collective, most of them were in London, and everyone else was like all in these different areas around the world. And the fact that we all managed to come together for this stream, I think is like really, really cool.
How many people are in Eastern Margins? Kind of like organizing things.
Oh, we've definitely grown. So there's me, David, and Aria and Patrick, who I guess do the main label stuff from like admin to A&R to the business side of things. And then we also have extended crew, which has like Elaine, Kalisha, Sherry, and AJ, who help with events, social media, like curation events and stuff like that. We've started doing like videos. We've gotten someone named Sophie who's going to join in on the short form videos because TikTok is catching up to us, whether we like it or not. So it's just like, we got to get some Zoomers in. And then, yeah, you know, you're part of the Eastern Margins extended community as well. Because that's it. We have this core, we have the label crew, the core group, which is like the people I just said. And then we have our extended community of like loads of people around the world that we like collab with, like really talented creatives, people that make videos. We've got like Oni who helps us with videos. You know, you help us with writing. And then we connect with like Eternal Dragons. Like they're part of our community too. Because like it's just like, yeah, we see what you guys are doing out in America. We fuck with that. So, yeah, I would say the Eastern Margins community is just, like, massive, especially with, like, artists that we regularly work with.
I guess, like, just in terms of how you've sort of grown as a collective, like, in terms of, like, what you do, do you want to talk a little bit? Because it started out, I'm guessing it started out just throwing parties, right? And then sort of extended to doing music label stuff and now you're also doing kind of like, were you saying like artist management?
A little bit in a way. In my head, I'm just like, we just keep applying the clown makeup on, you know, the music industry clown makeup, where it's like, you start of like, yeah, let's do events. Let's run a label. Let's become a creative agency. You know? The artist management thing, like, I mean, for me, I have now been helping a few like Asian artists I know in Melbourne. Mainly because, like, I discussed this recently as well with, like, the Eastern Margins Collective. Because, like, at the beginning, we know what we're doing, but we also don't know what we're doing, you know? Because, like, Asian collectives came before us and they'll come after us. But there's still no, like, solid blueprint to follow. you know? Yeah. And the other stuff that's like big now, like 88 Rising and stuff like that, I'm like, I don't want to do what they're doing. Like 88, no. like you guys said, 88 Rising shall not rise. They need to stop, you know.
Stop rising.
Yeah, exactly. So we all kind of just had to figure out how to like navigate this industry. I've had to learn so much about how the music industry works. I even like said to a friend the other day, I was like, you know that meme that's like, I should have never smoked that shit? It's like, I should have never gone out clubbing when I was 18. Now, like, 10 years later, it's Friday night and I'm doing music PR work for free, you know? But because, like, I have all this experience now with, like, trying to get, like, press to write about us or, like, trying to get mm-hmm. artists to, like, trying to get more listens on Spotify. I'm trying to, tackle Spotify at the moment, trying to get more streams and playlisting mm-hmm. and all that kind of crap, which is just, like, a mind, like, it's difficult. But because I have all this experience now, when like artists come and they need some help with like releasing music and they need some help like boosting their status as an artist, it's like, hey, you know what? I actually have like quite a few years of experience under my belt. I can help you. And then I guess that's when people are like, oh, you're kind of managing them. But I mean, I don't really like that term. I'm more like a momager, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, yeah, when artists come, like, they you know, they'll send us demos. We can be like, hey, this is, like, not up to scratch yet. Here are some suggestions. Or they'll be like, can we release on your label? And it's like, our label is at capacity at the moment, but we're more than happy to talk to you about how to self-release, because I am a big advocate for self-releasing music. So, yeah, now with, like, with some artists that we have, especially, like, I think, like, I guess, like, with artists like Toji, they want to, you know, they're really big in Japan, but they want to break into a more Western audience. We can kind of like help them navigate the Western music scene and stuff like that. Mm. So I guess that kind of seems like artist management, but officially we don't have that title yet. Who knows? Maybe we will become a creative agency. We'll see. I honestly didn't think that we were going to get this far. I think this year, because we did get some Giant Management has offered to help us. All of us kind of had this meeting being like, all right, we've all got day jobs. We're all doing things. I mean, I now work at a dental hospital. Are we all in? Because it's a lot of work. That's the thing. It's so much work. I technically have, like, two full-time jobs. So my day job, Eastern Margins, and on top of that, I am trying to be a DJ as well. So, you know, there's a lot to do. Yes, we are managing some artists. That is my final answer. In a way.
I'm actually curious because I don't think we've actually talked too much about the stuff you were doing before Eastern Margins, like music wise. So,
oh really?
I'm kind of curious. Yeah.
Well, as in like
you said, you started in like Melbourne.
Yeah. If you want to know my journey, I think I have an interesting journey with music because I didn't come from a musical family. I watched this movie actually because like me and my mum like don't get along. She doesn't understand what I'm doing in music. And for a long time, I was just like, man, she's just a hater. Like, fuck her. Like, why is she just hating on this shit? But I remember watching this movie called So Long, My Son, which was about what China was like when she was growing up, when she was my age, you know, in her 20s. And this was like, I think like the 80s in China where like they were just kind of opening up, but there was a lot of government restrictions. And watching that film, there was a scene where someone got arrested for listening to the Jitterbug, like what, like you know, Western disco kind of music. And seeing that, I then was just like, oh, this is why I didn't have music growing up, because my mom just didn't have music. They weren't allowed it. They had like a few songs that the like cultural, like the Chinese government allowed. So I didn't have much music growing up. And then my mom wanted me to play piano mainly for like you know status purposes, like. Which I hated because, like, I had this, like, really mean Chinese teacher that would, like, make content warning. Like, this is a bit intense, but she would, like, hit my hand with a stick if I didn't do well. Wow. So it was, like, quite a traumatic experience. And then as a teenager, I got to the point where I was, like, 16. I was really good at piano, but I hated it. Like, it was awful. Like, I had to play, like, 3 hours a day. I was just convinced that I didn't have any musical talent at all. Mm. When I was, like, 18... trap music was like quite big, so it was stuff like the Melbourne Sound as well, like the Juicy Wiggle. If you don't know what that is, look it up. But it's
Juicy
bad.
Wiggle,
it's bad. And it was just, yeah, and then that kind of electronic music. I mean, I liked going out because I wanted to be like a cool club kid, but I wasn't that into the music. And I was like kind of against electronic music for a little bit because I was just like, oh, they're just like pushing buttons. And then at one point I realized, oh, wait, when I play piano, I was also just pushing buttons. Like, it's the same thing, except at least with electronic music, they get to make beep, beep, boop, boop, like cool noises. Most of my time in Melbourne, I'd go out, and because the clubs are playing like deep house and like Italo disco and electro and stuff like that, like I wasn't like that into it. Electro, I was like really, really into. The one video that I saw on the internet that inspired me to maybe pursue DJing or take electronic music a bit more seriously was the Two Sing Boiler Room, if you've seen that one from Shanghai. Because like for me, that was like seeing an Asian person, you know, absolutely smashing a boiler room in China as well. So I was thinking like, oh, maybe I could do this. I was like in my like mid-20s at the time. So when you grow up in a working class family, like you don't have the time to look at music. You don't have the time to like even... Like, we didn't have the money to buy CDs. I'm very grateful for pirating because that's what got me into, like, listening to more music. But even then, because, like, I was just... When you're working class, you kind of, like, get told that you can't pursue anything creative because you just need to, like, do things that pay the bills. So for a long time, I wasn't, like... I didn't think music was anything that I could pursue. But when I moved to France and I was working as a nanny, I had a lot of time in the day when the kids were at school. So that's when I started like digging for music online. And I was like learning about the history of like techno and house music and just like how like, you know, the politics behind it was like really inspiring because it was a movement in a way. And then I got into it, like I was just researching a lot more, started collecting more music. So yeah, I would say like getting into dance music, I've only been doing it for like 5 years, and then DJing, I still didn't think that I could really DJ or that it was for me until I was with Eastern Margins. And then before COVID, we were talking about doing a tour in China, and I was like, can I come? I want to do this. And then David was like, yeah, you can come, but means you're going to have to learn how to DJ. So that was like end of 2019 where I was like, okay, I'm going to figure out how to do this. And I had like one session at Pirate Studios where a friend taught me how to use the equipment, and then started getting some gigs, but then COVID happened. I lost them all, which in hindsight, I'm quite grateful because I don't think I would have wanted to close a rave with no experience. Like, fuck. And then because of COVID, I was like inside all the time and on the internet connecting with like so many DJs from around the world because I think all of us were just bored. So we're just like, yeah, let's all argue with each other on Twitter about DJ. This is a great idea. This is so good for our mental health. Let's just like have beef for no reason. But because of that, I like in like the lockdowns, I connected with so many like artists and all these DJs make like really cool music. And that's when I started listening to a lot more and I'd like watch their sets and I get inspired by it. So I guess for DJ, like I've been doing it for 2 years now. I kind of have to pinch myself. One major thing about my musical journey is moving to London. I truly got a musical education in London because, yeah, like when I went to London, there was the Eastern Margin side of music where I was hearing more experimental stuff, Deconstructor Club, just like really interesting sounds I had never like really heard before. And then my friends would take me out to like garage nights and I'd just be like, man, this feels great. Like I love the feeling Speed Garage makes me feel. And then I was like hearing about stuff like jungle and drum and bass and all that kind of stuff, which I'd never really even heard of. Shout out Tim Reaper, because my friend was like, you should listen to Tim Reaper. I was like listening to his NTS show a lot when I was living in Berlin. It was getting me through my Berlin depression. I was seeing like artists like Sherelle and stuff like that, just really inspired by the sound that they were putting out. Because for me, I was just like, oh, I've never really heard anything this fast, like. And all these like breaks and stuff like that. I mean, at the beginning, I remember listening to it, like, I don't think I like this. For me, I'm like, this sounds really messy. I don't know what's going on. And then you listen to it more and you're like, holy shit, this is amazing. So I guess now, like, even as a DJ, I would try to like push more like 160 fast sounds. And because I have so much exposure to such different types of genres, I want to like try and put it all together. So that's why my mixes are really chaotic. My recent trip in London really made me, like, appreciate how much variety that city has. Because it was a Friday night. I was out at the NTS studio doing a show on, like, Australian hip-hop, which, like, you know, it was more, like, avant-garde hip-hop that my friends are making. I did a show about that, was walking down the street, bumped into a few of my friends. So these, like, European dudes, like, I think they're French, and they make kind of, like, kind of like left field pop and stuff like that. I was just talking to them. They were going out to a night. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm heading out South London. I'm going to go to a Future Retro London event, which is like all jungle. And then I said, oh, yeah, later, if I have time, I'm going to go to a Speed Garage event. And like, what kind of city has just four such like varieties in one night that you can just easily go to? But like, that's I think living in London and even visiting London really shaped my musical journey. So now I'm just like, all right, I guess I should take this seriously.
How long were you in London before lockdown started?
I think it was like a year and 6 months. I was in London I was like going out quite a bit.
That's a solid amount of time.
It is. And not going to lie, there was like when lockdown happened, I was obviously devastated, but part of me was kind of like, oh my God, I could sleep. Like, thank God. It's just like, because I was like working full time and out at events every single weekend. Because that's the thing with London. It's a tough city. You really need to like hustle in that city. Everyone has their day jobs in London. Like the cost of living there is fucked up. So everyone's working. Everyone's doing their music shit on the side. Everyone's tired. But I also think everyone's also having a good time because we always just end up going to clubs. Someone does a reload and it's like, yes!
That's my favorite thing about London is the reload. We need more reloads in the rest of the world.
That's one thing I noticed about London with like their DJing style as well is that it is more interactive with the audience. I think DJs do like really read the crowd and then they notice the reaction of the crowd when they play a track and they just spin it back. And I was just, and I'd never seen that before. And at the beginning, I was like, what are they doing? And then I was kind of like, wait, that's a great idea. Like you just dropped a banger, play it again.
Yeah. I also love like crowd gets so hyped and they're just like, oi.
Yeah, I've never really seen that in Australia. Does that happen much in the US?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't happen here. I think people would be confused if it happened, honestly.
Yeah, so I was just like, I think a lot of that is actually probably a bit inspired by like the grime scene as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You were in Berlin for a bit, but it was like pretty much like still kind of locked down when you were living there.
Yeah, Berlin was weird. I mean, I'd visit Berlin a lot when I was living in Europe. Because I had friends based there and I thought like Berlin was... Berlin is a cool city and they do have a great music scene, but it is very techno heavy. And then I moved there kind of against my will because Australia had closed their border.
Right.
I was being deported from the UK, but the Home Office understood that I couldn't actually go back to Australia. So they were just like, yeah, please leave, but like we can't force you to leave, but please go. So impulsively, like one of my internet friends in Berlin was like, yeah, if you come to Berlin, you can crash on my couch. And then the week after, I was like, I've booked a flight. Like, I'm coming because I wanted to get out of London. London had gotten too much for me then. So I wanted to get out. So I moved to Berlin. It was like kind of locked down. There wasn't that much music stuff going on. I was still meeting like quite a few DJs and artists around. So that was cool. And everyone in Berlin has CDJs. Or some sort of mixer at their house. So you could just like go over and just like play some tunes with each other, which I think is like, it's actually one thing I do really miss about Berlin. The fact that all my friends are DJs. It was weird. Like towards the end of Berlin, things were opening up again. I did go to a few really good parties. Have you heard of this club called Burgein? I'm not sure if you've heard of it. No one really talks about it that much.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't place it.
Yeah. Yeah. I went there. It was good. I was a Burgein hater for so long because I just thought their like line policy was ridiculous. And I was like, what's a big deal about this club? Who cares? And then, not gonna lie, going in, I was like, oh, I understand why this is a big deal now. Like this is actually quite fun.
Can you describe what it's like for people who haven't gone like me?
Well, I like.
It's like really big, right?
It's massive. It is massive. Like for me, I was like put off by the line for a really long time. But then one of my friends was playing, so she put me on the guest list. So I was like, okay, if I don't have the line up, I'll go. But I think like, I mean, I was hearing that people were lining up like 5 to 9 hours when Burgein opened up again to try and get in.
Oh God.
Yeah. And then that's the thing. You line up and then you could get rejected on the door. And I was just thinking like, why would people spend that time? But you go in. Okay. So going to Burgein, you go in. You literally get pat down. Like it is more strict than airport security. You get completely pat down, so they make sure that you don't have anything on you. And then the bouncers are kind of scary. They also, so I didn't see that famous bouncer Sven, but the other guys were just like intimidating enough. And then you go in, and then you walk into like this kind of foyer area, which is where the cloakroom is. And that area is so big, I was like, oh, this is the club. Like, is this it? You know, like, is this it? And then you think that's it, and then you turn and you go in, and it's just like pretty much pitch black. And then you see like a staircase going up, and you go up the staircase, and then you keep going up like almost two floors, and that's when you see like this huge arena. It's probably like three stories high. And that's like the main Berghain dance floor, and you've got like the DJ just like in the against the wall, and the DJ booth is even like locked, so you can't punters can't just go in. And then there's a massive dance floor, and then they have like quite like beautiful bars actually that you can go to. There's a few bars that you can go to, and the furniture is really really nice. And you keep going up these stairs, and eventually you get into like Panorama Bar, which kind of feels like a high school gym disco in a way, because that's like what it kind of looks like. But they have a bar in there too.
That's a separate room.
Yeah, it's a separate room. And then you walk behind Panorama Bar to just, if you want to go around Panorama Bar, you have to like walk behind this like passage, and that's where like I guess people are having sex and stuff like that. And they have like all these areas that you can chill. You can smoke inside, which is great. The toilet lines, like there's, I realize this about like German club culture, that because you don't socialize when you're on a dance floor, you're too busy dancing, no one's talking. You socialize when you're waiting in the line for the bathroom, because that takes like quite a long time. And everyone just packs into a cubicle together, and that's when you get your socializing. You talk about what you've been doing in the club. You'd be like, hey, where have you been? I haven't seen you in 3 hours. Like, that's where I saw so many of my friends. And I've been twice. I went once when it was nighttime, the night to daytime. And then you realize, like, you go in at night, and then all of a sudden in Panorama Bar, they kind of open the blinds for the windows as like a lighting effect. And that's when you realize it is sunlight outside, and you're just like, holy shit, it's probably home time. Whoa. The second time I went to Berghain was very chaotic. A friend of mine was playing Panorama Bar, and their set finished at midday. My flight got into Berlin at 10:30 a.m. from London. I finished DJing in London, went straight to the airport, got on a plane, landed in Berlin at 10:30. Yeah. It was just like, I have an hour and a half to make it to the Panorama Bar dance floor. I did not think I could do it. And I looked at my watch. I'm like, okay, Berghain's 15 minutes away. I've got 20 minutes. And I was like, the Uber was driving there. And I remember like my ex at the time, he messaged me being like, are you in Berlin? And I was like, I'm literally like 3 minutes away from the club, but I know my friend can still play. I like ran up to the line, went straight up to the bouncer. I was like, oi, you need to let me in. Like my friend's DJing, their set's going to finish. And he kind of just like looked at me and was like, are you on the list? It's like, yeah, dude, of course I'm on the list. Like, I know how this club works. Like, I'm on the list.
Let me in.
Yeah, I'm like, Jack's like, hurry the fuck up. Look at me on the list. And then this was like, I got in. And like went, just like ran through everyone, pushed everyone out of the way up the stairs, just like got into Panorama, pushed everyone out of the way of the dance floor, just like went up to my friend, was just like cheering. It was like, I made it. And then they like kind of stopped DJ to come around and give me a hug. And then
that sounded crazy.
It was a movie. It really was. It is like one of the only club spaces that I've ever been to where you can literally spend like 30 hours in there. They sell ice cream in Berghain and smoothies.
Ice cream?
And smoothies, oh, yeah. They sell, and then the people...
Do they have food?
No, but people know to pack food because like in the... Yeah, in the cloakroom area, there's like full on like lock... There's like a huge system going on in the cloakroom area. So I remember like being in the line thinking like, oh, everyone's just like dressed in like real boring outfits. Like I'm a bit confused. And then I see them go in, and that's when people completely strip off. That's when like, you know, the leather daddies, they strip off and wear their like... They're like, you know, one harness on their chest, and they're like pretty much naked the whole time. And then I think with that, that's when I realized like kind of like how valid the strict door policy was and the no camera policy, because people are in there like, you know, they're just completely themselves. I don't think they want to be filmed. I know I don't want to be filmed when I'm in Berghain.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say why in case my mom listens to this. Or like other people listen to this, but yeah, it is a space where you can really just like be free and just do what you want and just listen to music for like literally 30 hours. No one makes you go home. They really don't make you leave. Once you're in, you can stay as long as you want.
Well, you've heard it here.
You have the inside scoop. Yeah. So I recommend going I don't know how people go every weekend. That's exhausting. But I think if you're into music, you should definitely go if you can.
Yeah. How is it coming back to Melbourne? Like coming back as a DJ and like knowing more and like yeah, just kind of like seeing the scene from a different vantage point coming back.
I mean, it
and being involved in it too, because you've had some shows.
I was dreading it because I had such a bad experience the first time around, like growing up in Melbourne, trying to get involved in music. It was bad because essentially I got pushed out for calling out the racism and stuff like that. So I was kind of just like, well, fuck this. I'm just going to go to Europe. Like, you know, I don't feel welcome in this city. And then coming back, it was a bit of a slow start. So I never really went out. I think I like did like one gig and then just got stuck in a relationship. And then recently I am like, that relationship ended, so I got more involved again. And Melbourne is small. Melbourne is definitely really, it is small. So it is really strange to me to go out in the city and have people call me by like my former name, being like, oh, we haven't seen you around in years. Have you been? Like, we heard you were overseas. And I'm just like, who are you? I have no idea who you are. Like, how do you know me? What is this? So yeah, recently I have been going out and getting more involved, and it is nice because like I do feel quite welcome. People like you know, because I am perpetually
people know you.
Yeah, perpetually online, people know me. Like I went to one club and the headliner bought me a present. I was like, sick. This is nice. Like this is great. Met a lot of people. People have been really friendly. I have played a few DJ sets here and there. There's like this really big club that I used to go to when I was like 18, 19. And at that time, I like desperately wanted to be seen at that club because it was like a cool club at the time. And I remember like going back recently. One, that venue's tiny. Like after you go to Burger and you go to that venue, you're like, man, this is small. I used to think that like when I was a kid, I thought it was like the biggest club I'd ever seen in my life. It's tiny. And then I met some of the bookers there and I was like telling them about Eastern Margins. So I want to like do an Eastern Margins Lunar New Year takeover, which I think is.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which I think is like very fitting for like the beginning of Eastern. You know, Eastern Margins started in the UK for Lunar New Year party. So I think I've been trying to figure out what to do with Eastern Margins in Melbourne. And I think this is like a good starting point. But I'm also like a little bit stressed because it's like, cool, the first event that I'm going to do in Melbourne is at a 2,000 capacity venue. Like, fuck, I really, like, I really go hard or go home.
You move different.
Yeah, just straight into the deep end with anything I do. And I just meeting, like, more people. Like, I met, like, the people that run Daddy Worldwide, which is, like, a great, like, very... They recently just had Unique. It's like a great queer party. That's one of some of the best parties I've been to because you feel like... You feel liberated. You can do what you want. You can be yourself. So, yeah, there's definitely, like, really interesting pockets of the Melbourne music scene that wasn't around when I was living here. A lot of the people running these parties are, like, a few years younger than me. Like, they were probably in high school when I was going out. And, like, some of them, I'd ask them, like, oh, yeah, like, how old are you? And they think I'm, like, trying to, you know, question their age. I was like, no, I'm just asking because I don't know if you know the nights that I knew when I was going out. The main issue with Melbourne, though, like since I've left, all the clubs that I used to frequently visit have all shut just for like development and stuff like that. I think the council of Melbourne, instead of pushing arts and stuff that they used to push back in like the 90s and early 2000s, they're now pushing more business and restaurants these days. So like a lot of club spaces are closing to be turned into apartments and like office buildings and stuff like that, which is really shit in my opinion. So loads of venues are gone. So when I'd come back, I was like, I don't even know where to go out to. Like everything's changed so much. As I've come back, almost like treating it as a new city, looking at a perspective like I didn't grow up here. I've just moved to Melbourne, like in a way, you know. And then I'm just gonna navigate all these new spaces and meet all these like new people and stuff like that. But people have been really, really kind and really welcoming. Yeah, I'm excited for like the rest of my time in this city, however long I decide to stay.
Who are you? Who are you thinking of, like booking for the party?
Oh, that's the thing. There are so many. Like I was brainstorming which DJs to put, and I like, put a few feelers out there of like any of like DJs based in Melbourne and Sydney. There are so many. Like this, it's just like I was just yeah. Cause
yeah, you were saying there were like when you came back. You're like surprised how many Asian people there were.
Yeah, just like in the music scene, just killing it. I'm so happy because, you know, I wasn't seeing any of that. I think when I was like really active in Melbourne, the only DJ that I saw quite a bit around was like Jennifer Lovelace, and she was on like supporting gigs. So now to see her doing like these headline slots, it's amazing. Yeah, she's huge. I'm really happy for her. But yeah, there's just so many like Asian DJs and artists and rappers just doing things, absolutely killing it. I don't want to spoil too much about that event, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe you can't say it yet.
But like, I do know though, I want to get like my friend Nerdy, who's part of the Korean rap group 1300, to come down from Sydney to DJ. Like maybe I might DJ, and then like headliners wise, I'm not fully too sure. But there's just like loads of great DJs about like Liv, DJ Tiny Puppy, you know Liv. I want her to DJ. I want her to DJ.
Yeah.
There's like my friend Mimi, who's Sirachi, she's a Vietnamese rapper. I want her to DJ, and I also want her to get on the mic as well. And then part of me is also thinking, like, yeah, I know that club is a club space, but why don't we get some, like, guitar music in there as well? So we'll see. We'll see what I can do.
Nice. Do you have any help, like, organizing it? Or is it
no.
All you?
It's probably going to be all me. I mean, it's not until January. That's the thing. It should be, like, not that much work because the venue has everything organized. You know, like the venue is a set venue, it's a set night. I'm working with the venue's night called XE54, so I just have to program it and make sure the DJ show up and then make sure get paid afterwards, which I don't think should be too hard. And also, like, promoting wise, I'm thinking, like, I'm gonna go old school, I'm gonna get flyers. I'm like, I want every Asian person in this city to be at this party. And I said to my housemates, we should print off flyers, drive them all the way out to, like, the Asian suburbs, put the posters up, be like, come to this Lunar New Year rave, like, you'll love it. And just, like, priority-wise, I'm going to get, like, everyone. I want everyone's family to be there. Invite your mom, your dad, invite your grandma. Like, grandparents get on the guest list, free entry. I want them all there. Set up a mahjong table behind the decks, like, for a chill area. Because there's, like, VIP area. So I'm like, mahjong table.
That's genius.
Yeah, get a dumpling table, making table going up, like, you know. Fuck it. Like, we can just get one of those, like, gas stoves that you make hot pot. Yeah, true. Just have, like, hot pot behind it. Yeah, I mean, I probably have to figure out what I can do. Part of me was like, maybe I can get firecrackers in the club and just, like, light them up. And then if they say no, it's like, that's an attack on my culture. I need firecrackers. I'm excited. Very nervous, but very excited as well.
It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of talent out there.
Mm-hmm, right? Definitely. A lot of talent everywhere. We're all so talented. Just very proud.
Do you remember the mix that you made for us?
No, I was literally thinking about it this morning because I got like this On This Day notification. So the mix came out exactly a year ago today.
That's wild.
I do remember the vibe that I was going for because I know with Eternal Dragons, I think I was like very inspired by Andrew's like nightcore mix that I listened to once when I was living in London. So I was just like, I want to go fast. I want to be a bit chaotic. I just remember that was the vibe. And I remember like, I think with that mix, it was one of the mixes that I did where I did go like a lot faster than usual. And I remember wanting to include quite a lot of Asian artists.
Yeah. And you were in, you said you were in Berlin.
I think this mix was one of like the first mixes where I started combining more like fast, ravey Asian dance music with like a bit of like the jungle and stuff that I was listening to now that I'm like looking at the track list. Because it has a few of my like favorite sounds releases on it as well. I mean, I started off with like Oh Young, Simmer Gui, and then ended on Prayer in Your Arms, which is an atmospheric jungle tune. So that's the journey I went on with that mix. Time's past, I still want you here with me. Can we bring it back, cause we were meant to be. Although time has passed, I still want you here with me. Can we bring it back, cause we were meant to be.
Great mix. I feel like us just across the time you've been like pretty prolific, like you've had like
a prolific
residency, like doing the NTS stuff, like a lot of guest mix, like you had the Lot Radio
thing. It's also in Half Moon for a little bit as well. Loads of guest mixes. I was like writing this list of what I had done for some Nike thing, and then I was yeah, I kind of like was like, oh, wow, I need to, because I have major imposter syndrome. When you come up in the music scene being told that you can't do this and then you start doing things, like every time I do something, I don't really think of it as like something that I'm doing for my career. I'm like, oh, cool, someone asked me to do a mix, I'll just do it. In hindsight, I look back and I'm like, wow, for someone that only started DJing in, I guess, like 2020, 2 years ago,
yeah,
done a lot. I have done a lot. Done a yeah, lot. Played yeah. some like I haven't played like that many clubs, but a lot of the events that I've done, even like my first proper DJ set to people was like a Keep Hush rave in London. Even my first gig in Melbourne, I was like, I closed my friend's club night, absolutely smashed it, and I was just like, wow, this feels really good. But I've also done many character building sets now, where I just like. A few sets where just like, you know, no one on the dance floor, or I've completely killed the vibe of the crowd because I didn't research the venue or what the crowd would be into. It was like this one bar gig that I played. I had a 3-hour set, and then with the first half an hour, the complete dance floor emptied. I was like, fuck, how do I bring this back? I brought it back though. I brought it back. And I think that for me, I was like, okay, maybe I'm like decent as a DJ.
That's a win.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a win. You can bring it back.
Exactly. So that gave me a bit of confidence. And then, yeah, in London, I remember, like, playing a few gigs with, like, to, like, I guess, cheering dance floors, and they played a festival and stuff like that as well. So, yeah, I've done a bit. I have. And there might be more coming depending on how things work out.
Some big things may be coming.
Maybe coming, yeah.
Are the big things in the room with us right now?
They're always in the room. That's the thing. The big things and my potential are actually always in the room. That's why it works.
Well, it's been lovely chatting with you. I think.
Oh, is it done?
We've hit the hour.
Hit the hour. We didn't even talk about the internet.
Oh, let's talk. Okay, let's talk. Let's
yeah,
talk.
It only exists like digitally.
Yeah, I mean, we've never met in person.
No, we've never met in person. We know each other very well, and for a few years now. I have a lot of those relationships with a lot of people in music. You just know them online. And then you're at the club and you're like, whoa, holy shit, it's you. Everyone's online, right? Everyone's always on the internet. And I just didn't think how online I was until I was on this dance floor in Berlin. And me and this guy were just both cheering at the DJ. And the guy turned and looked at me and he was like, holy shit, you're Jax. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, you're Jax. And he's like, I'm from New York. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he was just like, yeah, you're that person that everyone knows online. I was
like, you're like so online. Do you think it was because of lockdown that you became more online, or were you already pretty online like before?
I became more online because I started using the internet more for like music stuff, right? And that kind of happened when I was living in this small city in France where I had no friends.
Mm.
Not because I'm weird, it's just like I think in that city I realized like, oh, if I had grown up in this city, I would have left this city. So the people around my age, I guess, just weren't on the same wavelength as me.
Mm.
So because of that, I spent a lot more time on like music Facebook groups and stuff like that. Started posting memes and stuff on Instagram and then got like bigger online. And there was a period where I was like going on about like more like political kind of like posts about racism and stuff like that, which I've kind of stopped because it gets a bit much. And then during COVID, it was when I started, like, just chatting to people. Because originally I just go on the internet, you know, you have a mutual, you like their post, you share their post, that's about it. But because of COVID, like, I think everyone was just inside and wanted people to talk to. People were more open to just having, like, chats and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's how you and I met, because we were just chatting online.
I think I DM'd you because of the ketchup and ramen
thing. Oh, yeah, true, yeah. That part of COVID where I was like, I'm going to put ketchup in ramen. Like, let's just do this.
I was like, what the fuck?
It's good. You should try it.
But it's good, though. It's good. I tried. I was like, whoa. And then I think I like replied back to
Yeah, yeah, stuff. Exactly. Yeah. And then you just start talking to people and you make friends. And then life, I guess, is back to normal. But because I have like so many internet friends, all my friends essentially just live in my phone. I am still quite online. I'm still chatting. And I'm very open to chatting to people. A few people ask me about this. They're just like, how do you know so many people on the internet? I'm like, just DM them. Like, if they don't reply, they don't reply. But if they do reply, who knows what friendship is going to happen. Yeah, then you just end up like becoming friends with so many people because like,
and then
yeah.
and then you and then it means you have like people you could visit.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yeah.
When you meet them IRL, it's like pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Even like my last trip to London, I mean, I had the Eastern Margins crew and obviously a circle of friends that I had known when I lived in that city. But I also made like so many new friends with people that I didn't even like bump into when I was living there, but I just talked to them on the internet and then became friends with them. And then now, like a few of them are touring Australia soon, so I get to see them. Some of them might like go to Asia. It's like, oh, cool. Maybe I'll try and like link up with you there. So it's just like, yeah, I'm like very grateful that the internet allows me to send unhinged messages to random people. Be like, hey, love your productions. I'm Jax. What's up? And you end up talking about like some like really interesting things. And I was like DevGirl, one of my favorite jungle producers. I have him on Instagram, and it was like one conversation where I was telling him about how the food pyramid in America was invented because the US bought too much cheese and kept forcing cheese onto everyone. And he was like, wow, I never thought about it like that. I'm like, yeah, you should think about it. Like, don't you think cereal is a supermarket scam? And it's like, why am I messaging someone this? But you know, it's just like
you're built different.
It's just, yeah, you just like talk about stuff like that, and then you don't know where it goes.
Have you met?
No, them? No, not at all. No. Okay. I think they live out in Boston. Like,
oh, Boston, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even know what they look like. Like, if they walk past me on the street, I'd have no idea.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about the internet sometimes.
Mm.
And your memes. Your memes are pretty iconic.
Yes, I have retired from memes, though. I have retired. However, I do like...
Retired?
I've retired. I don't... You've noticed. I don't churn out memes as much as I used to anymore.
That doesn't mean you retired.
I've semi-retired. However, I did find out that, like, one of my friends who's playing Pitch, they're opening for Ben UFO, so I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be, like, to Ben UFO, like, I'm not going to let you play your first track until you thank me for the meme that I made about you that you posted on your Instagram to, like, advertise your Deck Mantle mix, like... Thank me for my
What was
service.
The meme? What was the meme?
The meme was, I don't know if you remember the video, he was doing like a peace sign or something. It was a picture of him DJing doing a peace sign. And then I put the caption, this is peak male performance. You know that meme template that was like, this is peak physical performance if you don't like this? I was like, this is the peak male body or something like that. And then he was like, memed again. And then it was like, listen to my Deck Mantle mix.
Nice.
So, yeah, very looking forward to meeting him, being like, you don't know me, but you also know me. Like, and I think that's
so funny.
I actually think that's my vibe in, like, in the music industry. It's like, people don't know me personally, but they've heard of me.
But they know you, yeah.
Like, my friend was telling me, he was talking to people in Melbourne about me, and some of them would be like, oh, yeah, like, you know Jax? Like, no, I don't really know Jax. And like, what about Asian Girlfriend? They're like, oh, yeah, I know Asian Girlfriend. Like, I'm like, yeah, that's me. I think about changing... I think about changing my Instagram name, but I don't want anyone else to have it.
This is the same thing happened to me. Like when I interviewed Oh Young, they were like, "Oh, all right, Weeaboo Diaspora." Right?
Yeah, 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 exactly.
People
exactly.
don't even know my name.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that. I'm okay with that. I enjoy being. It's fun being digitally perceived, but also I do get a bit annoyed when people like meet me or they think they follow me on Instagram, they know me, but this is more just like complete randoms that don't interact with me because like being online is fun until you get weird stalkers and stuff like that or like people grab you on the street. They're like, oh my God, Asian Girlfriend, like I don't know you, we're not friends. Like the annoying thing in Melbourne recently, I've been getting quite a lot of messages from people being like, hey, I just let you know I saw you in the city. Like, cool. Like, why are you telling me this? Like, lots of people saw me in the city. Like, the random I sat next to the train saw me in the city. You don't see them messaging me. Like, what do you want from this? You know, that is a bit weird. So it's like, it's good and then it's weird and then it can get bad. But it's mostly good, just like everything in life. It's good and it's bad and it's mid.
Very Jaxian of you.
Yeah, just like, it's good, bad, and mid.
I've been coining this thing Jaxian, like your philosophy.
Oh my God, that's actually really funny because I was hanging out with some friends and I was spewing my random absurd political ideologies if I was to ever become benevolent dictator of the world.
Benevolent.
And we were calling it Wang Thoughts, but I think Jaxian Thoughts is much better.
Jaxian sounds like a philosopher.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Maybe I'll make it to Jaxian Thoughts. I have great politics. Like under my rule, like you know, all ABGs will get their bleach and hair bleach and eyebrows government subsidized. Like every there's a whole department in the government that helps that. I'm going to ban all scooters because I don't like the e-scooters and they annoy me because I keep tripping over them. I won't go on about my absurd political ideologies. No one wants to hear that.
But when they run, you better vote. You better get out and vote.
Get exactly. Vote for me. You know, it's just, that's the thing. I'm like, there'll be like no racism,
whatever they run for,
no sexism, nothing like that. But I'm also just going to ban ricotta cheese because I don't like it.
Classic. All right. I think that's a good note to end on.
Good note to end on, me banning ricotta cheese. It's just not a good cheese, okay? Like, I just say it's not good.
I'm lactose intolerant, yeah, exactly. So I'll make no comments.
Exactly. All right.
Yeah, before we go, do you want to share where people can find you on the internet? Your socials.
My Instagram is Asian Girlfriend. My LinkedIn. Okay, no one needs my LinkedIn. So Instagram is the handle's Asian Girlfriend. I'm not that active on Twitter anymore because I'm just like busy, but occasionally I'll retweet some stuff. My Twitter is ASNGF near you. That's enough. No one needs to find me anymore. Yeah, I keep it.
Oh, well, what's your SoundCloud? Do you know?
Yeah, it's Jeff Wang, I think. But I don't really. SoundCloud breaks my soul because I have to subscribe to it in order to upload mixes just to archive it. And even then, I'm like, no one listens to these mixes. And all my mixes get archived on radio shows anyway. So, like, why do I do this? I hate the fact that I have to pay for SoundCloud. It really annoys me.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah, it's just like. But yeah, I mean, like, if you want to find some shows I've done, you can always look up Eastern Lodges on NTS or, like, the Lot Radio archives as well. My TikTok is Jack's name as well. I think it's Jack's Salt Wang. I don't know. I downloaded TikTok and then.
Did you post anything?
No, I'm too scared to open the TikTok app because I don't want the algorithm to learn anything. So I actually haven't posted. Oh my God, it's time to be real. You can add me on Be Real. My Be Real is. My Be Real.
Wait, I gotta do it too.
My Be Real is Burial Official. That's me. I post on behalf of Burial. He tells That's me so what funny. To do. I'm his ghost poster.
Okay. You can find Eternal Dragons on socials. It's just at Eternal Dragons with a Z. Yeah, and thanks to each and every one of you for listening in. This has been Smoking Section.
Yes, and I had one cigarette the whole time. All right, bye everyone!
Eat it.